Welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman.
And today our extra special guest is Robin Raskin. She's one of the major champions and influencers in innovative tech products today. She's well-known and respected writer, publisher, TV personality, conference events planner, creator. You name it, she does it in the world of tech. She has helped countless companies go from startups to major success stories. She produces these incredible conferences and expos at CES and other venues throughout the year. And welcome to Lying on the Beach, Robin.
I wish I were lying on the beach, but thank you for having me.
Well, I'm going to start off asking the question that everybody asked me, as you are at Innovation and so am I. What areas will be hot in 2020? What's your thoughts?
But, you know, every year it gets harder to predict. And the reason why is because all tech is now political. And we know that, you know, and we're coming up on a crazy time in our political life, and it's meeting the tech life head on. So, yes, you will have 5G adoption. It's going to be huge. And what does that mean? And what kind of new experiences will that offer? And yes, you've got AI. What is it? Which companies are doing it for real and which companies are not? You've got VR, you know, coming more into the mix. But on a sort of larger level, you have a real shift taking place. You know, we know the next smartphone is not going to cause waves of hysteria, you know, unless it's foldable 400 ways. So the big trends are going to be, what does your smart home look like? What does your smart city look like? And, you know, what does a smart planet look like? Things like privacy are going to enter into the conversation this year with tech solutions. Health is going to be big in the conversation this year. Longevity. So all these new areas where you wouldn't have thought it was about products, but it really is.
So, Robin, would you say it's product or it's topics?
So I think we're getting to kind of a convergence where the products are maybe less exciting than the topics. And the topics, you know, if you have the one piece everybody needs to make two systems integrate, or the one television that can control all the appliances in your home, I think those are things like we're waiting to see.
That's interesting. So we're just curious because everyone comes to you first and they must be knocking on your door already, you know, for CES and other venues that you work at. Are there any particular companies or concepts that we should be aware of that are going to dominate the news?
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of the last industries to be disrupted. So I look across the spectrum and say, okay, well, they disrupted fitness with, you know, wearables. What hasn't been completely disrupted yet? And one of those is money. And the banking industry, I don't know if you pay attention, but it was the biggest year for fintech funding ever. And cryptocurrency, as you know, with Facebook's announcement, between Donald Trump saying he doesn't like Bitcoin and Facebook going full hog on the Libra, you've got the makings of a big story there. You have clearly, you know, the entertainment guys, CES, a show like CES has always had traditional roots in entertainment and communications industry. So they're going to offer the next iterations of their entertainment. The car, as you know, has become the sweetest spot ever. And it's pretty amazing, not just for new cars, but for add-ons to your old cars. We ran into a guy the other day that has a license plate frame that you and I could buy for our jalopy today, but it has a camera in it, and it can watch when somebody rear-ends you or smacks you and take photos. So this persistent video camera it's a little idea. It's cost-effective, but I think those kind of gems of ideas are going to be big news.
Robin, I think our listeners would like to know, what companies have you helped introduce to the tech world? Which are companies that you've actually were the first ones to see, were part of one of your conferences or expos, and now is a household name?
Okay, so one of my funny early on stories is this guy comes into my office when I was the editor of PC Magazine and explains to me how the entire world is going to get behind his encyclopedia that professionals don't write, people write it. And I literally just said, excuse me a minute, and I went and got a couple of colleagues, and I said, you got to hear this guy. He thinks he's going to redo the encyclopedia, and it was Jimmy Wales and Wikipedia.
Oh, my gosh.
So you just said it, and which I always, when I was the editor of PC Magazine, had a rule that even the nutcase with a dime downstairs has the right to come into our office and pitch us on what they think the next thing is. Because, you know, what's happened today is so many people have products I think journalists or tech watchers or influencers are just overwhelmed with how do you find real innovation.
Right.
And real innovation, it turns out, is not just the product. It's having the marketing strategy. It's having the vision and the clarity that you're solving a real world pain point, not just a something for your own ego. You know, and we see this a lot. We see people coming in and just inventing what their wife wanted or what their daughter wanted. And so it's like audience of one. But let's see, others were CorelDRAW, which was ultimately went out, but was the biggest drawing package. Magisto, which was a video editing package that was acquired on our show floor by Google.
Oh my God.
We've launched the thermometers, that digital thermometers that took your baby's temperature.
Yep.
We've launched the fertility products that could help you conceive. Last year, we were big on neural stimulation, which is a new brain technique. It's sort of like electroshock therapy, but a lot more defined, so it's hitting the right areas of your brain. So the ones I would think about this year that nobody thinks about are nutrition and food. The smart kitchen is getting super smart. There's going to be a lot of fun activity. Fashion has been on the cusp of breaking through. For years, I mean, for all the technology we have, nobody can do something simple like make your jacket warmer when you're cold and colder when you're warm. And you would think we could do that. So what I like to look for are those things that you go, oh my God, I can't believe nobody thought of this. And some of them are funny. I saw one the other day that actually gives hunters location marker so they can find their place in the woods. I mean, I think, you know, there is an audience there somewhere. I'm going, oh, can I just put that on my mother too? And so
right.
Some of it's like the context. And I know you guys have seen this. Companies pivot. They might have a small idea with a little bit of retrenching and coming out with it again. It turns into a larger idea.
Robin, that begs the question, especially for someone like you, and I want to take advantage of this opportunity. You touched on it a little bit before, but I really want you to underscore it now. What makes a company work? Why do like some even the best inventions don't make it? Like when Wikipedia came to you, you know, that was an idea that, you know, may have gone south. What are the ingredients to make a company work?
Right. So to me, it's laser focus. I get calls today for products that aren't in my wheelhouse. Let's just say cannabis, which is very hot right now. It doesn't have a chip in it. Not really my wheelhouse. Until tech is more a part of it, I don't cover it. So, you know, knowing what you do and doing that well is number one, not getting distracted along the way. And that's like the number one thing. You know, the number two thing is building a team that's not all little mini-yous, but building a team that complements each other in skills. So if you ever met my CFO, you know, like the person I throw darts at night. But I need those skills to make my company whole. And I appreciate and respect those skills because I don't have them. So I think, and then, you know, this marketing strategy, and it is expensive. And I don't think people realize how the expenses around building an innovative product. Just if you're coming out with a legally compliant cryptocurrency, you might as well kiss $750,000 off to the lawyers. If you are paying for, you know, a marketing strategy, a go-to-market, you know, you're going to have again as much your development costs. The decisions you make on outsourcing and where to do what and whether to manufacture here or abroad are all so important. And most innovators don't know what they're getting into. And the ones that succeed have a pretty good idea of what they're getting into and know that they're going to need to just be laser focused and hire out. It's never been so easy to build a product just because we have so many tools. You have tools to hire freelancers. You have tools to do a lot of things online. We can all talk about something that needs innovation. PowerPoint's the only thing that's been around for like 500 years and has never changed.
Right.
We all need a good presentation deck tool.
Right. So, Robin, what kind of companies are attracting the big investors today and why? Having said what you said, who's getting the money? Because not everyone is getting the money anymore.
No, so I think the investment crowd is also diversifying. But the one I would say in general, overall, the investors I have seen be most successful are ones that build the pipes and not the things running off the pipes. So that means, you know, I've put my money in Cisco or a platform or a way to integrate different systems. Most of it really behind the radar of what a normal consumer sees. But in many ways, I think that is where the money is. Look at AI. It's a great example. And people are trying to fund AI companies and trying to figure out which ones are the best ones. But they've got to ask themselves a question. What am I going to be an expert in? Is it AI in medicine? Is it AI in fashion? Is it making sure Lois gets the right sunscreen for her body type on the beach? You know, so there are all these verticals that are starting. And if you look at investors, they're starting to get rather vertical in the kinds of businesses they're looking at.
But aren't investors very fickle? Like they jump, you know, like they when they feel like a certain segment is doing well, they have a big checkbook. But if somebody comes to them with another idea outside their wheelhouse, they don't want to invest in it. That's been my experience.
Yeah, well, it takes a lot of expertise. And investors, you know, someday I always said I'd write the book, Women Are From, you know, People Are From Mars and Investors Are From Venus. Because they are fickle. They want to see the returns in a this lifetime. And that's part of a problem, you know. I think when I grew up, when you grew up, companies were built to last, and now they're built to sell. And that is an issue. And, you know, underlying all of this craziness is this: you've got these big four, you've got Amazon, Google, Facebook. And, you know, there is talk of, are they too big? Are they stifling innovation? And if you go back to... years ago, they broke AT&T up for the same reason, you know, and that turned out okay.
And nothing interesting lately comes out of the big companies, the Samsungs and the Sonys and whatnot. They're really following the little guys. The little guys come out with something new, and then they try and incorporate it. But you don't see really, really anything that's, you know, newsworthy for the most part coming out of the big companies. At least that's what my experience is.
Well, yeah, it's a mix. I mean, I'd argue that voice, so you've got Amazon and Google doing voice, and voice may be the biggest thing that's hit us in the last couple of years. You know, the fact that you can ask the weather, I won't say her name, you know, that you can do such a myriad number of things with your voice and not your keyboard. So if you extrapolate, what else should you be doing that doesn't involve a keyboard, you know, which is the next thing is mind reading. And you read about Facebook recognition system. And you know that if you go to Sephora now, you can sit in front of those makeup mirrors and but they're not just letting you put on makeup. They're actually looking at some emotional. Are you frowning? Are you happy? Are you frustrated? And they will register that with eye tracking and face movements. So, and then they will sort of allow a salesperson to come over and be prescriptive. You know, so I think emotional tracking behavior is going to be really like the next thing. Yes, we all have 500 channels to watch and we all have recommendation engines, but they really are pretty bad. So how do you're going to see people looking to solve that. You're going to see people looking to solve the fashion problem. You know, I don't care how this dress looks on some model. I want to know how it looks on me. I need a nutritional diet just for me. Those are all tech problems that are going to be solved. And you're also seeing, I think, a generation of kids. And you tell me if I'm wrong, growing up with a little more of a social conscience, I've seen some of the stuff I've seen has come out of, I sit on the CTA Foundation, and some of the things for accessibility, wheelchairs that go upstairs, navigation indoor systems for sight impaired people, virtual reality glasses that can let people with very bad macular degeneration still see and read by using the outside of their retina. So you're seeing like major things, but they tend to not be the mass adoption that we're used to.
Right. So tell me, because we're going to have to wrap up soon, and I want Steve to ask the last question here, but I still don't get, after all these years, why digital money came into play, and why is it so big?
So when I sit there and look at what the conversation should be about, first of all, my belief is that you shouldn't just have a conversation about technology. It's got to be kind of like applied tech. Here is a problem. This is how we solve it. Smart cities is a good example of that. HR, you know, there are whole applied areas where you can put technology to work to help us do better. So digital money just seemed like the natural thing. You know, Bitcoin was getting larger and larger. Cryptocurrencies were coming out every single day. Banks, you know, whether you know it or not, you know, most of the user interfaces that you use are fintech companies that have kind of shelled the bank and worked with them to make things easier. MasterCard is now on your phone. You know, when you go through all these changes, sometimes I always say when you're in history, you don't realize it because it's happening so fast. But the fact that I went up to a water bottle machine today and I could pay with my phone, I could pay with this card, I could, there's so many ways to do things, and yet there's still friction. And so the idea is, how do you take the friction out of these things? And the best example, my favorite, is invisible payments. You go in an Uber or a Lyft, you get out, you don't even know you paid. It's like, and if you go to a hotel room these days, you know, it's often that you'll get like, you know, one bracelet or one swipe to kind of navigate your way through your whole stay there.
Right.
So these are Internet of Things. So IoT is big. Machine-to-machine automation. My car goes to the gas station. I'm not going to have to go out and fill the pump. My car will talk to the gas pump. They'll do the financial transaction. It will show up on my bill. And this is all big stuff. So anything people are building now in the kitchens and in the living rooms, and it started with door locks of all things, but people are starting to buy more and more of people's appliance selections are smart in some way or another. And that's great. It's going to let us get old in our homes because the stove will shut off and we won't burn, you know. It's going to let us control remote homes. It's actually phenomenal, but we don't realize it because there's so much of it and it's happening so quickly.
I think last question, because we're running out of time right now, would be, what advice would you give to our listeners about, they want to innovate, they have an idea. What advice do you give to people? Because I get that question a lot. I'd like to hear your answer.
So identify the components that you need to make this work, whether it's an existing website or an existing widget, and do your schematic. I personally, I don't know how you feel, if I could do anything but investors, I would do it, because I think it just takes away from getting your job done. You know, mm-hmm. if I could get my family or friends or a bank loan, I would tend to go that way. And ironic, I have done two inventions, as Lois knows. I built a watch and a set of glasses just to show that if you kept to the strategy, identified the parts, came up with a marketing strategy, you can build it and it will sell. Just people die out somewhere along the way.
The hardest part with any invention is the tenacity. It's never the idea. It's the tenacity to bring it to market. It's having that, you know, I'm going to do this and just keep forging through. And the average gadgety thing takes like 8 years to go from idea to market. So maybe not so true with tech, but certainly true with some other things. So, yeah, it's really, like you just said, it's just sticking with it and making it happen.
I think able to pivot along the way, being able to say,
absolutely.
You know what, this is going to be too expensive this way. We'll cut out some stuff, or we'll use a different part and we'll do it this way instead. And and it's amazing. Just do your research. There are so many resources for inventors out there now and people willing to lend a hand, especially, you know, if you're going to really make a change. And I think it's actually, who knew? You couldn't study invention when I went to college, and you can now. You can study entrepreneurship. These are codified. This is like kind of our future. So after all these years, I still get excited about it.
And the pivoting you mentioned is so great, because so many people have this great idea, but they keep it to themselves. When you actually share it with other people, you get feedback that then lets you know, like, you know what, maybe I should go in this direction, side, this idea. You know, maybe Uncle Louie has a good suggestion here. By giving it feedback and not just keeping it to yourself, it really can grow into something that, you know, may be the next big thing.
I agree. You know, people have this idea that if they share, it's gone. Their intellectual property is gone. The intellectual property is, yes, it's worth something for sure. But what's really worth something is the fortitude to stick out through the whole journey. And that's what I think people don't understand. That's what Kickstarter and Indiegogo were such great platforms, because the idea was, you iterate, you get the community's response, and then you go back and you change things. Look at the beta store. If you go into a beta store, you are part of their feedback loop. Their camera's up and they are recording how you interact with the product, how long you stay there. They're feeding that information back to the vendor or the inventor, and then they go and make certain changes. Where the button is, maybe it's got to be a different color, you know. So we've never had such a robust invention ecosystem ever before.
I agree. So these are good times for inventors, we hope.
Yeah, definitely risky times. It's always good to have a few friends with heavy bankrolls. And I always, the best column I ever wrote was called "The Medicis and Madison Avenue: Why They're the Same." The Medicis funded the arts and music and culture, and Madison Avenue funds a lot of stuff too. You know, Pepsi and Coke are doing some of the best AR and VR experiments out there. Every bank, every major corporation has its own accelerator now. So, and I tell people, if you're looking for a program to be an inventor, it's a dating game. It's not like they'll take me. There's a right program for you with the right sensibility and the right mindset. So you really have to figure out who you are first.
I think that's great. A great spot to end this. Lois, you agree? Good place to end?
Love it. Love it.
Okay. So once again, I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman.
And we have been Lying on the Beach. So long, everybody.